Science Students Association, and a brilliant neurolinguist. The DJ's name was Saja. And on it went. Sam's tactical contacts face-printed them all. The one named Chuan was suspected of being involved in Nexus trafficking in a minor way. Baroma maintained an anarchist blog called Eat the West that he thought was anonymous but was likely all talk. None of the rest had raised any suspicions. The DJ mixed smoothly into a new track. Sam felt Cade smile. It was a Rangan Shankari original, a tribute to his friend, a welcome to them. She had a flash of the party she'd met Shankari at, of how she'd instantly known so much about every song he played. The information beamed into her head via Nexus 5. She remembered her surprised delight when it had happened.
Stay focused, Sam.
She pushed it out of her head, concentrated on the job. No sign of Suk Pratnung so far. But getting closer with Narong and his friends might still pay dividends down the road. Cade was enjoying himself, holding court, flirting with a young Thai woman named Lalana, telling stories of his adventures with the famous DJ Axon. Lalana was laughing, hanging on his every word. Sam peered beyond them, watched the young women on the dance floor. They were taking turns peeling small pink tabs off a sheet, then sensually affixing them to each other's throats. Soon two of the women were dancing closer, hips and waists pressed together. They kissed, open-mouthed. The third one pressed up behind them, her hands roving across the others' bodies.
It's called Sappho.
Narong spoke into her ear.
It gets girls into girls. That's a few hours.
Sam turned. He was very close.
Is there one that gets boys into boys?
She asked. Narong nodded.
The working boys and Patpong take it. A lot of them are only into men for the money. Makes the job more fun.
And you?
Narong shrugged.
It was fun. I prefer girls, though.
He put his hands on her hips. Sam pulled away, wagged her finger at him.
Not so fast, mister. We American women aren't all so easy.
Come on, Narong. Impress me. Lead me to Suk Pratnung and his Uncle Ted,
she thought. Narong laughed and took her around to meet more of his friends. The party grew as more people trickled in. Saja and a few others cornered Cade and got him talking more about Rangan, which led to an animated discussion of their research projects, of sending data from one brain to another. Chuan bought a round of drinks. A bleach-blonde Thai girl in a low-cut blouse and unnaturally large breasts came up and snuggled into his arm. He started telling a story about a drug called synchronicity. Sam's ears perked up.
Synchronicity?
She innocently inquired.
What's that?
It's N and M together. The champagne of trips.
He kissed his fingers for emphasis.
N as in Nexus?
She wanted him to spell it out for her.
Yeah, and M as in empathic. The M makes you want to connect, want to understand, want to love. And the N actually lets you feel what other people are feeling. It's beautiful, magical.
John closed his eyes as he described the experience. Out of the corner of her eye, Sam saw the amateur anarchist, Baroma, try to shush Chuan with a hand gesture. Chuan rolled his eyes in annoyance.
You know, that's what I've heard, anyway. I never do anything illegal like that.
His voice dripped sarcasm. Everyone but Baroma laughed. Sam laughed with them, made eye contact with Chuan, smiled at him.
This is the loose-lipped one, she thought. This is the way in.
She looked at Chuan and blinked to pull his bio up again. Excused herself to the ladies' room to read it. Neuroscience PhD dropout. Known associate of Suk Pratnung. Single. No known income, but a pricey flat in a trendy part of Bangkok. He liked to post pictures of himself in exclusive clubs and exotic locales, attractive young women draped all over him. A player. She knew his type. Easy to manipulate. She came out of the bathroom, squeezed back into the circle between Narong and Chuan, pressed against them both. She waited for the right moment, shared a story about a fictional LSD experience she'd had on the beach in Mexico, the awesome connection she'd felt to the waves and sun and sky, how it had changed her life. Chuan smiled, nodded.
So, you never tried synchro then?
He asked. Sam shook her head.
Nope. Sounds awesome, though. Offer me some,
she willed him.
See what happens.
Ever tried Nexus?
He asked.
Just once, a couple months ago, at a big party that Cade and Rangan threw.
You did Nexus with Axon?
Chuan sounded incredulous.
Yeah, and like 100 of him and Cade's friends.
All on Nexus.
Chuan's incredulity was rising. Sam nodded.
Yeah, everyone was linked to everyone. Oh, it was amazing. And wouldn't you like to know more about how they did that?
She thought. Sam closed her eyes, tilted her head back, pulled out her best awestruck hippie tone of voice.
It was like we were all one being, all of us in the party, all one giant consciousness, total ego dissolution.
Now, how would they react? Had she laid it on too thick? She opened her eyes. Chuan was staring at her. Then he started to laugh.
You all right, girl?
He turned to Narong.
This chick's all right, Narong. Nice job finding her.
She pressed a bit more against Narong, grinned at Chuan.
That's how we play in California.
Chuan laughed again.
Ha! Well, we should show you how we play in Bangkok. In fact,
Chuan!
It was Baroma, the careful one.
Be careful what you say in public.
Chuan shrugged, splashing his drink a bit, narrowly missing the girl on his arm. Annoyance flashed across his face.
Public? We're in our own club, man. This isn't public.
Roma replied in Thai.
Kaupen kona mirigun.
She's an American. Chuan appeared dumbfounded.
So?
He replied in English. Sam kept her mouth shut.
Rao jam pen tong kui.
Barom said sharply, gesturing at Chuan and Narong. We need to talk. He stepped away. Narong turned to Sam, shrugging apologetically.
Sorry, our friend's a little paranoid sometimes.
With that, he followed Baroma towards an empty corner of the club. Chuan frowned, shrugged, and followed. There was a brief silence, and then someone made a joke about Baroma not feeling very playful. People laughed, and the moment passed. Sam watched the three of them out of the corner of her eye. Baroma and Chuan were moving their arms animatedly, apparently arguing. Narong was making conciliatory gestures, playing peacekeeper. Interesting. Sam wandered over and joined the conversation with Cade, listened in on a discussion of neural input-output architectures. The Thai students were hanging on Cade's every word. He'd clearly impressed them. There was a tap on her shoulder. Narong. He gestured her away from the group.
Everything okay?
Sam asked. Narong grimaced.
He's kind of paranoid. Look, I was wondering, we're doing this thing on Friday. It's going to be small, really chill, a family kind of thing.
He paused.
It's a synchronicity circle. There'll be about a dozen of us. Really mellow. Would you and Kate like to join us?
That sounds amazing,
Sam replied.
Yeah, I'd love to come.
Great,
Narong said.
It's in an apartment above us in this building. Meet here at 10 p.m. on Friday.
Fantastic.
Sam checked her watch. It was almost 1 a.m., time to get going, she told Narong. Together they extricated Cade from his conversation. Narong repeated the invitation to the synchronicity circle on Friday.
Say yes.
Cade felt reluctant in her mind, but he answered in the affirmative. Narong gave them directions to reach Soi Samahan and flagged down a tuk-tuk or a cab. Eventually the goodbyes were said, and they headed out into the cool Bangkok night. Watts crouched on the rooftop. An old wound throbbed softly. Cade and Katarines and their new friend, one he'd identified as Narong Shinawatra, would presumably be in the club for some time. Time to do a little research on that driver. He pulled some of his clearest full-frontal shots of the man off his rifle scope, used his phone to search for similar pictures on the net. Possible matches scrolled across his vision. Nope, not that one. Not the next either. Similar, but not the same face. Not the one after that, or the next dozen, or the next 100 to follow. Nothing promising in the first few 100 matches at all. He went back, selected a 3/4 profile shot from the scope, re-ran the search. Garbage. More garbage. More garbage after that. But wait, what the heck? Image 438. Chinese premier Bao Zhuang. They looked nothing alike. How had that matched? Watts zoomed in. What he saw knotted his stomach. The match wasn't on Bao Zhuang's face. It was on the face of the man behind him, in the shadows. His bodyguard. Chinese Central Security Bureau. The Chinese equivalent of the Secret Service. The date stamp said October 2039, 6 months ago. What were the odds that a member of the Premier of China's security detail was now, 6 months later, assigned to drive Su Yongshu around? What were the odds that a Chinese military advisor, who he'd seen die in Kazakhstan, would come back to life 2 years later in either of those roles? No. He knew what he was looking at. These were three different men, all creations of the Chinese super soldier program, all clones. What did it mean that Xu rated one as her driver? It meant that she was very important indeed. This was getting heavy. The more he learned, the less he liked. Just then, the door to the club opened, spilling light and sound out into the alley. Watts dismissed the images on his goggle display. It was Cade and Kataranis. They would pass right below him. It was time to try contacting Cade another way. He was atop a roof at least 30 feet from the ground. Even with Nexus 5, this was at the outside edge of his range, but he had to try. He let the filters on his Nexus drop, reached out to feel Cade's mind as they walked below him. There! Cade! Fuck! Watts recoiled, reeled his thoughts in as quickly as he could. There were two minds running Nexus down there. One was Cade, the other was Samantha Kataranis. He caught his breath. Did he have enough control to reach Cade without Kataranis feeling him? He couldn't be sure. This was going from bad to worse. It was time to get Cade out of this. He wished it could be his friend's choice, but this was getting way too deep. Cade couldn't know how heavy the players were, couldn't know that he'd been followed last night, couldn't know how much danger he was in. Without that information, he couldn't make an informed choice. Watts was going to have to make it for him. The rifle was in his hands. He'd pulled it out without thought. His fingers moved with a mind of their own, screwed the silenced barrel onto the stock. He could get Cade out now. His hand slid the scope onto the assembled weapon, a shot to the head. His arms lifted the rifle up, brought the scope to his eye. The back of Kataranis' skull filled his vision. The crosshairs lined up perfectly. Her skull would be hardened, reinforced with a graphene mesh or a composite foam. The bullet might not penetrate, but it would bear her to the ground, give her a massive concussion at the least. His thumb flipped the safety off of its own accord. She'd have pain filters. He'd need to fire more than once to be sure she was incapacitated. His index finger found the trigger. Could he take her down and not kill her? The force of the impact might just pulp her brain. Watts pulled in a long, slow breath. He couldn't be sure. To be sure of getting Cade out, he'd have to risk killing Kataranis. Fuck. He lowered his aim. The leg. He could put her down that way. And if she had a weapon? If she turned and fired? He let the breath out of his lungs, re-engaged the safety, pulled his face away from the scope. The data fob was a weight against his chest. So close. There was another way. He knew the route the taxis and tuk-tuks used from hotel to conference center. He knew the rough time that Cade and Kataranis would make that trip. An intercept while in transit was the best option of the ones he'd looked at. He'd get Cade out that way, tomorrow. There was no more point in following them tonight. The action would be tomorrow. Watts broke down his rifle and stowed it again. Then he took off across the rooftops, leaping lightly from one to the next, on a course towards the main street. He had preparations to attend to. 24. One tough bitch. Cade felt tightly wound up as they walked down the alley. Sam let the silence stretch out for one block. Another. Yet another. Finally, she reached out to him.
What's on your mind?
Is that obvious?
It's getting to be.
It was true. The more time they spent in this Nexus linkage, the more attuned to his emotions she became.
It's about the party they invited us to on Friday. I'm not going.
What? You want to use these kids to get to this dealer, Ted Protnung, and to do it, you're going to blackmail them into helping you, just like you did me. That wasn't part of the deal. I'm not going to help you. Sam groaned inwardly.
she still had to debrief him and to confront him about the things he'd been holding back. This was going to be a long night.
Cade, we don't care about these kids. They're small time. We just want to get to Ted Prot Nung and his Nexus distribution network.
And you'll fuck over their lives to do it.
Not if they cooperate.
Cooperate in helping you find someone whose crime is selling people a tool to connect to each other? Find him so you can kidnap him? So you can kill him? What happens to Prot Nung?
That isn't any of your concern.
Like hell it... Pain lanced through Cade's mind and body, sizzled down the link to Sam's mind, spasming, jolting pain, muscles constricting against one another, thought collapsing. Sam felt it an instant before she heard the sounds, the soft pfft of a silenced rifle of some sort, the meaty thud of a projectile striking his body, the crackling zzzt of electrical discharge, the involuntary scream through clenched teeth, a taser round. Time slowed. Her senses came alive. Rifle sound. Taser in the air. Spin. Crouch. A second projectile sailed through the air where her chest had been, missing her by inches. Followed the shot back. Third floor balcony. 60 feet. Two shapes. Burly. Rifles. The graphene and ceramic blade was in her hand as she thought it, then hurtling through the air from her outstretched arm. She moved as she threw, continued her spin, and dashed towards them. Rifles tracked. Fired. A hideous gurgling as her knife ground home in an exposed throat, one down. A taser round skidded in a shower of sparks off the cobblestones to her left, 40 feet. Another ricocheted spectacularly off the alley wall. She jagged to the side, dodged another shot, 20 feet. A taser round took her in the back of the thigh. Her muscles spasmed, sending her stumbling to one knee.
Behind me! Fuck!
The taser round was still discharging. Sam reached back, yanked the barbs out of her clenching muscles, hurled it blindly at the balcony. Another round took her in the shoulder. The momentum spun her around, landing her face down on the wet cobblestones. A third took her in the back. Her muscles clenched violently, flared with pain. She overrode them, came up to her hands and knees. The Nexus connection had frayed, was totally down. Tactical contacts were on the fritz. The multiple electrical discharges had disrupted both. She wasn't going to be calling for backup. Ahead of her, far down the alley, a fourth figure in the shadows. Tall, thin, hooded, just standing there. Sam came up to one knee. Behind her she heard a clang and a thud. Footfalls from the other direction. The shooters were heading for her. Good. More rounds in the shoulder, in the back. Their momentum sent her sprawling on her stomach. Volts and amps rocked her body, tore a scream from her mouth. She forced herself to go limp. Silence. The sound of breathing. Footfalls. Sam held still, eyes half-lidded. Booted feet appeared in her vision.
Yai ba nyung niao,
one of them said. One tough bitch. They had no idea. The other responded in Thai.
Bitch killed Prang, man! Fuck! I want to make her scream!
She heard the scrape of a knife being drawn.
Later,
said the one who'd called her a tough bitch.
Take her inside, I'll get the boy.
He stepped over her towards Cade. Sam snapped out with both her hands, latched onto tough bitch's foot, yanked on it with superhuman strength, and rolled. The thug went down hard and fast, spinning in the air as he fell. She let go of him, kicked her legs up, and brought herself to standing, just as the other one came at her with a wicked 10-inch blade. He was huge, ugly, covered in tattoos, his rifle over one shoulder. He brought the knife down in a vicious overhand swing at her face. Sam stepped inside his reach, snap-kicked him in the groin, broke his nose with a fast jab to his face, and then grabbed his still-extended knife arm and used it to throw him over her hip into the ground. The rifle clattered away from him. A gunshot exploded in the alley. Something ricocheted off the wall. The hooded figure was firing. Sam crouched low, turned to get to Cade. He was moving, up on one knee, trying to get upright, trying to get into the fray. So was the first thug, tough bitch. Oh no. The second thug, tattoo boy, took a page from Sam's playbook, grabbed her left ankle and calf in a crushing grip with his two hands. Oh fuck, she thought. He yanked hard, pulling her off balance. She fell to the ground in plank pose, caught herself with her hands. He swung Sam by her leg and her body followed. The brick wall of the alley came at her in vivid slow motion. She raised an arm to ward it away. Her arm collided with the wall.
Her head followed, slamming painfully into the brick. Stone chipped. Dust fell down on top of her.
Fuck.
Tattoo Boy cocked her back, sending her body out towards the alley, then swung her at the wall again, harder this time. Sam managed to roll, took the blow on her shoulder rather than her head. Bricks gave under the force of her impact. Blood and dust were dripping into her eyes.
Fuck.
The knife was on the ground where he dropped it when she'd thrown him. It was beyond the thug's head, just out of his vision. He swung her back again, cocking her body for a good hard swing at the wall. She had time to see Cade on his feet, moving towards her, until the other thug's open hand collided with his face, sent him sprawling back to the ground again.
Shit, shit, shit.
Sam got her free foot under herself, heaved against the cobblestones with it, kicking herself out and away from the wall as the thug cocked her back. The move surprised him. His swing and her kick sent her towards the knife. She reached out, stretched for all she was worth, got a hand on the hilt just as Tattoo Boy swung her back towards the wall. Sam twisted to the side, stabbed to her right with all her strength as he swung her. The knife sank deep into his upper arm. Her spine slammed into the wall hard. The force of it pulled the knife out of her hand. Her head torqued back, battered against the wall. Shattered bricks fell on her face.
God damn, that hurt!
The world was going gray. The thug was screaming. All 10 inches of the knife were embedded in his massive right arm. Sam kicked free, broke his weakened grip, rolled backwards, and came to one knee. Tattoo Boy was enraged. He was coming up to his feet, pulling the knife out of his arm with his remaining good hand. The rifle was at Sam's feet. She grabbed it. The wounded thug charged, bellowing, bloody knife in his left hand, completely out of control. Sam swung for his knees with the rifle, connected. Her blow struck one knee in mid-stride and hammered it against the brick wall. He went halfway down, scrabbled to get up on his other leg. Sam was faster. She rose up, spun to her right through a full 360 degrees, brought the butt of the rifle around in a whistling, blurringly fast arc that ended in a sickening, wet crack against his temple, driving his head into the brick. The carbon fiber butt of the rifle splintered and cracked from the blow. The thug's eyes rolled into the back of his head, and he toppled over. There was motion behind her. Sam turned. Cade was on the ground. The first thug, Tough Bitch, was charging her, knife swinging, face enraged. Sam dropped low, stepped forward inside his swing, and drove the barrel of the rifle like a spear deep into his abdomen. He collapsed forward onto it, his momentum impaling him. The end ground into bone inside him. The man groaned in pain and anger, his eyes still fierce, and tried to push himself back and off of the impaling rifle. Sam pulled the trigger, fired the taser round into his savaged guts. He spasmed, roared. She fired again. The man groaned louder. His eyes were still open. He was still struggling to get free of her. She pulled the trigger again and again until it clicked empty. The thug screamed and finally collapsed against her. She was sweating. Her heart was pounding in her chest. The one she'd impaled was still breathing. They both were. Good. She had a lot of questions for these two. It wouldn't do for them to die too soon. It wouldn't do at all. There was still one more out there. Sam looked down the alleyway. The tall, hooded figure was retreating into the shadows. The rifle she'd impaled the thug with was spent. Another rifle had fallen to the ground across the alley. She dropped the man slumped against her, dove for the other side of the alley, came up on one knee with the fallen taser rifle, aimed, fired. The move saved her. Twin explosions came from where she'd been, knocking her over. Dust and smoke filled the alley. The wall where she'd left the fallen thug had been blasted open, revealing a jagged hole into the building beyond. The third-floor balcony above her and down the alley had collapsed in a third blast, taking much of the building wall with it. The hooded man was gone.
Fuck, Cade.
She found him in the smoke, bleeding from multiple locations, unconscious, still breathing. There were plasticuffs on his wrists and ankles. She scrambled for one of the knives, found it slick with blood and gore, used it to cut Cade free. The explosions had burst the thugs open at midsection. The explosives had been inside them. Their bodies were burning. Someone didn't want them talking. It was time to get the fuck out of here. Sam hoisted Kate over her shoulder, sprinted toward the main street, pulled her phone as she went, pounded the emergency buttons, shouted into it as she ran.
Extract! Extract! Man down! Extract! Extract!
Watts was back on the ground in the alley network and halfway to the main street when he heard it. Had that been a yell? A human scream? Or had he imagined it? He paused for a moment, listened. There, another yell of some sort. Then gunfire. He turned back towards where he'd last seen Cade and Cataranes and broke into a run. Another scream. A man this time. Not Cade. Another. And then the thuds of explosions. Fuck! He yanked his pistol free, sprinted two blocks, turned a corner where he guessed the sounds had come from, saw smoke and dust and flames ahead, past someone running the other way. It was a tall, hooded figure. Watts got a fleeting impression of a hooked nose inside the hood, a bald head. Wait! The monk who'd followed Cade the previous night. Watts spun. The figure was retreating in the other direction, almost around the corner. He leveled his pistol. Stop! He yelled. The hooded monk kept running. Fuck. He aimed low to take the man in the legs, fired twice. Too late. The man was around the corner, shielded by the brick.
Fuck. Forget him. Find Cade.
He turned, sprinted the rest of the way to the source of the smoke. There were bodies burning, burst from the inside. Gore covered much of the alley. Brick walls had collapsed. Suicide troopers, whether they'd known it or not. Their facial structures looked tight. Their muscles were grotesquely large. A shattered rifle lay near one of the bodies, its business end covered in blood, the stock of it destroyed as if by impact. Another rifle lay against the opposite wall. He checked it. Taser rounds. Someone had wanted to take Cade or Cataranes alive. There were no other bodies in the alley. Either Cade and Cataranes had gotten away, or someone else had taken them. He looked again at the dead men. Their presence suggested that Cade and Cataranes had escaped. He stepped into the intersection between alleys, turned around. Four choices. Where would they have gone? Would they have hidden in this maze? Or would they have headed back towards the relative safety of public places? He heard shouts from down the alley in the direction of the main street. There. He sheathed the knife and loped off in that direction, gun at the ready. Shapes ahead. Do or die time. 80 miles to the south, the USS Boca Raton held station in heavy seas in the Gulf of Thailand. Monsoon waves splashed over the rounded, matte-black upper surface. The submersible covert operations craft rode with its conning tower just 2 meters over the sea to avoid detection. Despite the Boca Raton's huge size, Thai defense radar slid off its smooth surface, disappeared into its radar-absorbent materials. A Thai Royal Navy ship patrolled these waters, an Indian-built Kolkata-class destroyer. The captain of the Boca Raton would rather be 30 meters under, but his orders were to stay in continuous uplink, except in the case of imminent detection or harassment by the Thai Royal Navy. The Kolkata could only find them by dumb luck, the captain knew. Despite its 130-meter length, the Boca Raton presented a radar cross-section the size of a rowboat, and a sonar signature even smaller when still. The high seas and surface sounds of crashing waves made the ship effectively invisible. Still, dumb luck had killed plenty of men. His crew was on constant alert. Atop the conning tower, a directional maser powered through the monsoon rain and clouds, bouncing a narrow beam of data off a constellation of low Earth orbit satellites, hopping from one to the next as they hurtled through the sky at 8 kilometers a second. Unless something should fly directly into that narrow beam, the uplink was undetectable. 2 decks below the bridge, in a cramped control center covered in displays, Garrett Nichols analyzed data Cataranes had produced from the walk-down Sukchai market. Next to him, Jane Kim sifted through databases and the web, looking for additional information on two of the students at the party, the anarchist Baroma Nantakarn and the loose-lipped Chuan Sutakul. Another console showed a deep net trawl for data on the monk who'd followed Lane and Cataranes. Bruce Williams was off duty, back at his bunk.
Combat! Combat!
Jane called out. Nichols jerked his head up in time to see most of the data feeds from Cataranes cut out. He moved his eyes to the feeds from Lane. Most were down. GPS from both phones remained up. They were in an alley between the Buddha's Kiss and the main street.
What the hell?
He said. Jane rewound, played the last few seconds. Two assailants. Three. Four. Combat. Fuck!
Get the fire team there, stat!
He ordered. Sam ran down the alley, Kate across one shoulder, her phone in the other hand. The blasted thing claimed to be transmitting, but there was no sound from the speakers. She had no idea if her support team were hearing what she was saying, no idea if they had any data from her at all. The alley mouth was just two blocks away. Wait, figures there. Three, four of them, backlit by light from the street. Are those rifles? She ducked into a side alley. Were they her backup, or more assassins? She still had the knife she'd taken from the thug. She looked around for a place to hide Cade. There, a dumpster.
Blackbird! Blackbird! We're from the Nest! Here to get you home!
Voices speaking good English, the right code name.
Today's word is golden calf! I repeat, golden calf!
The right daily password. She relaxed fractionally.
Coming out!
Sam yelled. There were four of them, all local contractors vetted by the CIA, dressed as businessmen, dark pants and dark shirts, with conservative dark blazers over them. The automatic rifles and bandoliers of ammo gave them away. She knew that underneath the blazers they wore armor, packed more ammo and more weapons. They were mercenaries, not regular forces, but at this point she just didn't care. Thank God for well-armed support teams.
I've got a man down, she said.
Two of them came forward, took Cade's unconscious form from her, ran back towards the main street.
Emily, the point man said. Our car's at the alley mouth. We can take him. What's the sit rep?
Ambush five blocks back, Sam reported. Three-time muscle, taser rifles, trying to take us alive. I think he was the target. I was a surprise. There was a fourth guy, not muscle, headed off...
She paused to get her bearings.
East, in a hood. The muscle had implanted explosives, detonated after I disabled them. All KIA.
You get samples?
Sam looked down at the splatter of blood on her hands and clothes. More blood was dripping into her eyes.
Not intentionally.
You hit?
Minor, she said. But I'm going with him.
Lee nodded.
Roger that. We'll get samples and sanitize the site.
Fuck the sanitize.
Sam replied.
That was a fucking explosion. Bangkok Metro cops will be here soon. Get in, get out, don't get caught.
There could be no contact with the local authorities. Lee nodded.
I'll confirm with command.
He jerked his head towards Soi Samahan.
Car's back that way. Sooner you're in it, sooner they can roll.
He gave Sam a smart salute. Sam returned the salute, ran for the alley mouth. There was a four-seater Toyota there. The two on her team were standing by the front, their guns gone from sight. Eyes scanning the perimeter, hands inside jackets. The back door was open. Cade slumped inside. Sam dove in the back, slapped the interior roof of the car.
Let's go!
Watts froze, flattening himself against the wall of the alley, deep in the gloom. He held still, let the chameleon wear blend him into the wall, shield his IR emissions as it dumped his body heat into its onboard heat store. They were shouting in English, good accents, passwords of some sort. Four newcomers and Catarones. The newcomers wore business garb and automatic rifles. He recognized them. American-made. All ceramic and composites. X-ray invisible and non-magnetic. Perfect for sneaking across a border. At a guess, they were loaded with graphene-tipped rounds. Harder than diamond. Able to punch through any conventional body armor. Two of them carried Cade away, carefully, like a patient rather than a sack. That was a good sign. The other two new arrivals jogged his way as Catarones headed out of the alley. Watts froze, held his breath. They passed right by him without noticing. Short hair, bulky builds, military bearing. These were CIA or special forces, maybe local mercenaries, something along those lines. They matched the description of the men who'd lounged most of the night in the lobby of the Prince Market Hotel. Watts waited for the two military types to recede into the distance. He counted to 60, then crept silently forward to the mouth of the alley. Gone. Cade, Catarones, the other two. They were gone. This whole night had gone belly up. What the fuck had happened here? Who was trying to kidnap Cade? One thing was certain. Getting the kid out was going to be a royal bitch now. 25. the pawn seldom knows. Cade swam in and out of consciousness. He was in a car. Sam was with him. His head was in her lap, her hand on his brow. Lights raced by. There had been a fight. Explosions. He caught flashes of conversation. Tasers. Kidnapping. Abduction. He could just barely feel Sam's mind through a haze of static. She was concerned for him, and she was angry. Someone was going to pay. Then he was being moved, carried out into the night, through a doorway. There was a woman's face, tie, a stranger, and then a coffin lid closed down around him. He tried to fight, found he had no strength. They'd buried him alive. He blinked hard, and the world swam back into focus. Strange noises all around him. Then the lid came away, and bright light filled his eyes. He was in a compact surgery, an operating table with lights and two insectoid robotic surgeons occupied one wall. An emergency metabolic suspension tank was against a second wall. The coffin he was in was an imaging bed. They'd been scanning him. The Thai woman was at a console, looking at diagnostic results. Cade tried to sit up, failed. Sam gave him an arm, and he managed it on the second try. The Thai woman looked over at him.
You have a concussion. Not very serious. No significant brain bleeding. You do have a linear fracture of the skull on your right side, but it's faint and not impinging on the brain. You're going to have major bruising of the side of your face.
Cade grunted. She loaded up a syringe and approached him.
What now?
Cade asked.
I'm going to inject you with growth factors. Trust me, you want this.
Cade followed her instructions without further demur, letting her treat his wounds. He was lucky to be alive. If Sam hadn't been with him, or if she'd been a little bit slower, or if that guy had smacked him just a little bit harder,
then again, if it weren't for her, I wouldn't be in this mess at all.
The last step was a lumbar puncture. The Thai woman slid a needle into his back, between his vertebrae, sucked out a tiny sample. Cerebrospinal fluid. They're looking for signs that Shu inserted something else into me. They won't find any. After the Thai woman was done with him, Sam led Cade to a room where he could lie down, then disappeared. Cade dozed. He woke at some sound, disoriented.
Where am I?
The party, the fight, Thailand, Suyong Shu, it all came flooding back into him. A chill went up his spine. His stomach knotted up. He reached for the Nexus OS. No good. He couldn't get the OS to launch, couldn't invoke the Serenity package. The nodes in his brain were scrambled.
What was he doing here? Why were people trying to kill him, trying to capture him?
He was going to die in this place. They were going to catch him, torture him, and then, even though he'd tell them everything, they'd kill him. He felt faint. His heart was pounding in his chest. His breath was short. He was trembling. He felt cold all over. His body was covered in sweat. He needed to get out of here. The door to the room opened. Light flooded in. Cade flinched, threw up an arm to ward away whatever was coming.
Cade!
It was Sam. Samantha. She had something in her hand. She moved towards him, closing the door behind her. He flinched back farther, put both hands up to keep her away.
Cade!
She was on the bed with him now, her hands on him.
It's okay, it's okay, hush. It's okay, I'm here. You're safe, we're in a safe place. It's okay, shh.
Her words didn't reach him, her thoughts did. She was calm, she was comfort, she was strength and safety and resolve. He was someplace safe. They'd gotten away. No one would hurt him here. It was okay. Bit by bit, he relaxed. His heart slowed. It no longer threatened to burst from his chest. His breath steadied, the trembling subsided. Sam held him, and he clung to her. It was okay. It was going to be okay. They were safe now. It was okay. He lay that way for a while, feeling the comfort of her mind, listening to the strong beat of her heart, the rhythm of her breathing, feeling her stroke his hair as she whispered again and again that it was okay. Her thoughts grew stronger in his mind. He lay that way, and sleep took him. Sam stroked his head and whispered kind things and exuded support and peace and safety until Cade fell asleep again. This poor kid, scared and out of his depth. They were the same age, but Cade seemed so young in comparison. How was it that Cade, who'd grown up in a happy middle-class family, in a happy suburban town, shielded from all threats until recently, was the anxious one, while she, Sam, with all the damage and torments of her childhood, was the strong one? Maybe he was still recovering from the death of his parents 6 months ago. Or maybe he was the normal one. Maybe she'd just had all the weakness beaten out of her. She had work to do. She'd borrowed a slate from the safe house. She picked it up from the floor where she dropped it, shifted back into physical contact with Cade to reassure him, tapped and typed out a report. It took time. Three men, presumably Thai nationals, were dead. Bangkok Metropolitan Police would have found them by now. Her DNA could be at the scene. Oversight would have a field day with this. She finished up the report, shook her head, submitted it. Then she lay there, drifted into a half-sleep with Cade beside her. She woke, an indeterminate amount of time later, to a tap on the door. Someone turned the handle, stuck a head in. It was Lee, the squad leader. He spoke softly.
"You've got a call. ERD Deputy Director Becker. Want it on your slate or out here?"
Sam blinked the sleep out of her eyes. Her contact said 3:05 a.m. Cade was asleep, an arm around her.
"Out there," she said. "Be there in a sec."
Lee's head disappeared. Sam slowly extricated herself from Cade's embrace, slipped out into the comms room. It was a three-way call, Becker on one screen, Garrett Nichols on the other.
"Sam," Becker said. "You okay?"
Sam nodded.
"Yes, sir. Couple bruises, nothing major."
"I read your report. Good work out there. That was a hard fight."
"Just doing my job, sir."
"Any personal suspicions as to who the assailants were or what they were after?"
Sam nodded again.
"They were after Lane, sir. I'm sure of it. They hit him first with non-lethal weapons, but didn't hesitate to use lethal force with me. As to who they were, hired muscle or organized crime, I'd guess. The self-destruct suggests the latter."
Becker nodded.
"Nichols?"
"I agree with Agent Catarones. This was an abduction attempt aimed at Lane."
Becker spoke again.
"The major value that Lane has is the Nexus 5 design. That has to be what they wanted. As to who they are, let's enumerate the possibilities."
"Okay," Nichols said. "First guess, Soo Young Shu. She may want what Lane has. She's already shown interest in him. Inviting him to this conference may have been a ruse so she could nab him."
Sam mulled that over.
"Why go to the trouble of having dinner with him?"
"Maybe she needed confirmation that he was what she thought,"
Nichols mused. Becker nodded.
"We know that Shu has connection to Thai organized crime through Ted Prat Nung, and at their dinner there was heavy Nexus traffic between Shu and Lane. That might have been the confirmation she was looking for."
Sam frowned.
"Sir, how do we know that?"
"Lane's phone was recording all Nexus traffic near it for later analysis," Becker replied.
"Sir, I turned off the Nexus functions on the phone before their dinner, per plan, to minimize the odds of it giving Lane away."
"The record function remained on, Sam. We needed to determine whether or not Shu has Nexus capabilities."
Sam frowned again.
"Why didn't I know that?"
"It was on a need-to-know basis."
"And I didn't need to know?"
"No, Agent Catarones." Becker's voice was firm. "You didn't need to know."
"Sir, with all due respect, I think that data would have been operationally relevant."
"Agent Catarones," Becker said sharply. "That information was not operationally relevant to you. The phone was in passive record mode. There was no way for Shu to detect it."
"Sir?"
Sam started.
"This topic is closed, Agent."
Sam took a breath, held her temper.
"The pawn seldom knows what the king has planned,"
Nakamura had said once. She didn't like feeling like a pawn.
"Next possibility," Becker said.
Nichols cleared his throat, looked at the camera again.
"Ananda," he said. "He had Lane followed, demonstrating interest. It's possible they had a Nexus interaction as well. If so, Lane's technology could be valuable to him."
"Any luck identifying the man who followed Lane and Catarones?" Becker asked.
"Not yet, sir,"
Nichols replied. Sam held her tongue. Ananda seemed an unlikely suspect, but he had sent a monk to follow them, and stranger things had been true.
"Next possibility," Becker said.
"There are two possibilities left,"
Nichols said.
First, it's possible that someone else who knows Lane's work sold him out to some organization here. Maybe Thai Mafia or Ted Prot Nung's distribution cartel.
Sam was frowning.
Yes, Agent Kataranis? Becker asked.
Something just occurred to me, sir. Narang Shinawatra, the student who invited us to that after-party. He introduced himself to Cade, apparently bumped into him randomly. He rapidly befriended us, invited us to this relatively small event. He knew the route we were taking. He had the opportunity to notify the ambushers when we were leaving the club.
And we know that he's had contact with Suk Prot Nung.
Nichols was nodding. Becker nodded as well, thoughtfully.
Good observation. Any suspects on the U.S. side who might have sold Lane out?
Nichols shook his head.
We'll get on it, sir. We can mine phone and email for any contacts with people in Thailand or obvious short hops away. We'll look for sudden bank deposits as well.
Nichols, you mentioned one more possibility?
Becker prompted.
Yes, sir. The last possibility is a leak within our organization. Someone inside the ERD could have sold this information to the same sorts of sources as discussed in the last possibility.
Becker nodded. He looked troubled. Sam spoke up.
My instincts say no.
Why is that, Agent Kataranis?
Becker asked.
They would have come at us harder.
Cade came slowly back to consciousness. The panic attack had passed. Sam was gone from the bed. He could feel her across the link. She was nearby, still in the safe house. It comforted him. She was talking to her superiors. Becker. The thought of the man was like a bitter taste in his mouth. Nexus felt much stronger now, much more stable. Whatever effect the taser had on it, it seemed that sleep and time were undoing it.
Tasers.
They'd wanted to take him prisoner. He was lucky they hadn't gotten him. He owed Sam. She'd risked her life to keep him from them. There was only one reason for them to try to take him prisoner. They wanted what he knew about Nexus. They'd wanted to take it and make it their own, use it however they chose. And him? Perhaps they'd planned to kill him after they had what they wanted. Perhaps they'd planned to make him a slave, improving the technology for them.
I won't be anyone's slave. No one.
And the ERD? Ilya was right. He shouldn't have given Nexus 5 to them. He didn't trust them. That was the past. He wouldn't make the same mistake again. Had he actually thought of going to work for them, trying to change the system from the inside? No, he would just become another slave. He would find another way. And Shu? The same. Her goals attracted him, her promises captivated him. He wanted with all his being to join her. But her compromises were many. She was a tool of her country's military, and he wouldn't be a slave of the Chinese military any more than he would of the ERD. He would find another way.
They would have come at us harder,
Sam said.
They would have known that I was a field agent. They would have brought more firepower to bear and started with me.
Nichols looked thoughtful. Becker nodded.
Okay, I agree that a leak is a lower likelihood. Let's focus on the organized crime angle. Shu and Ananda, the dead assailants, are our best evidence. Any date on them?
Nichols shook his head.
No matches on face recognition, DNA, or prints.
What about the fourth person? Becker asked.
Nothing so far, Nichols said. We're running deep trawls now. If there's anything out there on any of them, we'll find it.
Becker looked down at his wrist. It was early afternoon on the U.S. East Coast by now, Sam knew.
Okay, he said. Good work, both of you. If there's one silver lining to this, Sam, it's that you saved his life now. He'll be more in your debt. He's primed to trust you more. He's vulnerable now, and he's going to look to you for protection and guidance. Take advantage of that.
Sam felt something inside her twist. Trust? Is that what this was about? Becker was continuing.
Nichols, I want you moving forward on all angles. This is a Pry 1 investigation now. Tap whatever resources you need. Sam, keep your chin up. You did good today. I want another report in 18 hours.
Sir,
Sam said.
There's something else I'd like to discuss.
Okay, Becker said. But make it quick. I have a meeting on the hill shortly.
Sir, I think we should abort the mission, or at least send Cade home.
What? Becker said.
Sir, we've achieved the primary mission objective. Kate has an invitation to Shanghai, and Shu has practically offered him the job. In addition, he's a civilian, and his life may be in continued danger here.
No, Becker said.
But, sir, Sam protested. The risk to Kate...
No, Agent Kataranis, Becker spoke with a flat finality. Leaving now risks raising Shu's suspicions, and Prat Nung is as important a target as Shu. This is the best lead we've had in 3 years. We have to take it.
But, sir...
Agent!
Becker raised his voice. Sam felt herself bristle. She pulled herself erect in the chair, said nothing.
This isn't open for discussion, Becker said in a tone Sam knew too well. We have an opportunity to get closer to Prat Nung. We're going to take it. If it's a trap, it's an even better opportunity to identify and neutralize the opposition. You and Lane, our asset, will be well protected, and we'll do absolutely nothing unusual, like sending the asset home days early to raise Shu's suspicions. Am I making myself absolutely clear, Agent Kataranes? Special Agent Nichols?
Yes, sir,
Sam said smartly.
As crystal, sir,
Nichols replied.
Good. Becker out.
His face disappeared from the screen. Sam slumped in the chair. Nichols' face drooped.
Sam, we'll bring security in tighter around you and Lane, starting immediately. Friday night, we'll have people stationed right there. Your support will be seconds away, I swear it. We won't leave you twisting in the wind on this.
Sam nodded sadly.
Thanks, Garrett. We can talk details later.
She disconnected. She dimmed the lights in the comms room, crossed her legs in the chair, put her hands lightly in her lap, focused on her breathing, tried to let her mind empty and peace come. A memory came instead, Nakamura. She'd been 19, perhaps, a year or so into her training. He'd been in his mid-30s, the summer he told her he was leaving the ERD, transferring to the CIA.
In this business, Sam, you have to remember that you're just one piece on the board.
What do you mean?
She'd asked. Nakamura often spoke in metaphors.
It's like chess, white against black. But it's not just one piece against another. It's 16 pieces on a side. Many will fall, even on the winning side, before the game is over.
Sam had mulled that over.
You're saying that if I keep moving forward with this, my life is at risk. I could get killed doing field work.
They'd been in D.C., on the National Mall. Nakamura had paused to skip a rock across the reflecting pool, had taken his time with his words. Sam had squinted behind dark shades in the bright sunlight, her newly enhanced eyes still sensitive to so much stimulus. Everything had hurt that summer. Already the viruses were spreading genes no human ancestor had ever carried through the cells of her body. Muscle fibers were lengthening to inhuman proportions and strengths. Neural ion channels and myelin sheaths were being transformed to speed nerve signals between brain and muscle. Reprogrammed bone cells were extruding organic carbon fiber webs to harden themselves against impact. Everything hurt, and she didn't care. She was going to save the world. She was going to save all the little girls. Nakamura had skipped another rock, then spoken softly.
Sometimes dropping a piece is necessary in order to win,
he'd said.
A sacrifice, a gambit, a trade for a more valuable piece. It's not just that you might be killed in this line of business. It's that you might be intentionally sacrificed or traded to further advance your side's position.
Sam had scoffed at that.
That's not how we play. We take care of our own.
Nakamura had grunted, said nothing. They'd walked a bit more in silence. She remembered the intense heat of the sun. D.C. was so hot that summer. Eventually she'd asked,
So what kind of pieces are we? Knights? Bishops?
Nakamura had chuckled.
You, my young friend, are a pawn.
Sam came out of the reverie. She could feel Cade through the Nexus link on the phone, she realized. The Nexus felt stronger now. It was coming back together in her head. She was troubled by the conversation with Becker, not just because he'd scolded her. It was the notion that Cade might trust her more now as a side effect of the ambush.
It was true. She'd felt it. The hostility had dropped. He felt honest gratitude that she'd saved his life. He'd felt comforted by her presence. That could only be an advantage to the mission.
In seeking to uncover the causes of an event, ask yourself, who stands to benefit from it?
More wise, cynical words from Nakamura. Becker stood to benefit from this, she thought. The mission did. The ERD did. Is there any chance this was a setup? That I was meant to beat those guys? That it was all to play Cade? Were those men pawns, sacrificed in a larger gambit? No. That was just paranoia talking. Surely just paranoia, wasn't it? 26. Masks. Cade was awake when she went back to the room. He opened his eyes as she entered. He felt much more settled than he had a few hours ago. He smiled at her. Shit, Sam thought to herself.
How are you feeling?
She asked. Cade came up to a sitting position as he answered.
A lot better. Sorry about that freak out earlier. And thank you. You saved my life tonight.
Just doing my job, Cade,
Sam replied.
Those guys in the alley, they exploded?
Sam nodded.
They had explosives in them.
Why would anyone agree to that?
Sam answered slowly.
They might not have known they were wired to blow. Their masters could have implanted the charges without their knowledge.
She felt Cade absorb that.
Are there things in me I don't know about?
Sam wondered. She dismissed the thought. It wasn't worthy of her. Cade nodded thoughtfully.
Tough call with Becker? He asked.
It took her by surprise. Had she been broadcasting that much? Had he heard when Lee came in to alert her to the call? Sam shrugged, tried to make it casual. She said,
just going over the situation, figuring out who was behind that attack and how to stop it from happening again.
Any luck?
Sam narrowed her eyes.
Tell me about the Nexus contact between you and Ananda at the reception last night.
She saw the flicker of it across his face for a moment before Cade caught himself. She felt it in the way his thoughts hardened as he got them under control.
What do you mean? He said. There wasn't any Nexus contact between us. We just bumped into each other in line.
He was lying. She was sure of it.
What did I really expect?
In a way, she was relieved. His clumsy lie let her put him more squarely in the category of asset, where she needed him to be. And in lying, he'd confirmed the suspicion she'd had. Ananda did have Nexus rattling around in his brain.
Cade, don't play dumb with me.
Cade shrugged.
I was in line, and he got in line behind me. We exchanged a few words. That was it. No Nexus, nothing.
Sam shook her head.
Fine. That's the way you want to play it. I also know you and Shu communicated via Nexus, and you hid it from me. You're walking the edge right now. Your deal is contingent on your full cooperation. Got it?
Cade shook his head.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I showed you what happened. My Nexus transmissions were totally shut down, and I didn't feel a peep out of her. I got the invite to Shanghai. Mission accomplished, right?
Sam stared at him. There was no sign he was lying, no twitch, no looking away. Even so, the phone had picked up the Nexus traffic. Was it possible that it had all come from Shu? For what purpose?
Show me again,
she said,
and show me your interaction with Ananda.
Cade nodded. Okay. The Serenity package kept him calm and cool. He stepped into the mask of false memories Shu had created for him. He widened the connection to Sam, watched as she roved through his mind. He weighed the texture of the alternate memories. They were a script more than anything else, a story. Shu had filled in the details beneath them, but the mind did that so well on its own. Memories were narratives. They were stories. If he could master the right narrative, put it on like a mask, he could fool anyone. Could he craft a convincing narrative for that brief moment of contact with Ananda? He tried to imagine it, tried to tell himself the story of how they'd bumped into each other, tried to make it real, tried to make it feel like the mask Shu had created in his mind. Sam moved systematically, painstakingly through his memories of dinner with Shu. She replayed some moments again and again. She found nothing. The false memories held.
Show me when you bumped into Ananda.
Cade sank into the alternate script, became a different Cade, told the story of that brief conversation in the drink line. A felt presence, body heat, the sound of a breath, a few words exchanged. Sam finished. She held his eyes with hers, then shook her head. Disappointment issued from her. Bitterness.
Cade, I don't know how, but I know you're lying to me. I'm just going to tell you one more time. If you don't cooperate fully, you'll go to jail. Dozens of your friends will go to jail. Some of you won't ever come out.
Distaste issued from her as she spoke. She didn't like this, Cade could sense. She wanted to do field ops, not blackmail people. He wondered if she knew how much of herself she gave away to him.
I'm telling the truth. I've got no reason to lie to you. I want to get this over with and get on with my life.
He let frustration and anger creep into his voice, into the emotions that seeped into Sam's brain from his.
I could just make her believe me, he realized. I could use one of the back doors. I could go into her mind and make her believe.
No, he would not do that. Not unless he had no other option. He had to draw a line. Sam sighed.
Fine. Have it your way. Don't say I didn't warn you when the shit hits the fan.
She shook her head again. She was angry at herself for something. Something involving him.
Now let's talk about today. We need to get back to the hotel. Your story is...
Wait a minute,
Cade interjected.
What?
This is over, right? I did what you asked. I've got the invite to Shanghai. She seems to want me for the postdoc position. How about I go home now?
Sam shook her head.
No, the mission's not done.
She was hardening herself. She didn't like this either. She was steeling herself to tell him things she didn't agree with.
Sam, come on. We were just attacked. You said yourself that they were trying to kidnap me. Someone knows something is fishy, and you killed those guys. They're going to figure out you're more than just a student. What's going to stop them from coming back? Is your mission going to be better off if I'm gone or if I'm dead?
Sam felt it, he saw, and his arguments hit home. They resonated with her.
It's not an option, Cade. The decision is made. We're staying. We can't do anything that will make Shu suspicious, and you leaving early would be suspicious.
Cade felt a hollowness in her as she spoke, a bitterness at hearing the words emerge from her own mouth, a grim resolve to do her job.
Look, it wouldn't be that hard. We can say I came down with the flu. I'll mail Shu, reconfirm the visit to Shanghai.
No.
Resolve came out on top.
I told you. The decision is made. We'll have tighter security. You won't be in danger. But we are staying and completing this mission.
Cade said nothing for a moment, just stared at her. Then,
I'm not going to help you blackmail those kids. I'm not going to help you fuck them over the way you did me. You're not going to use them to get at someone else.
Then Rangan and Ilya will go to jail. You'll go to jail. More than 100 of your friends who were at that party will go to jail. They'll lose jobs. They'll lose scholarships. They'll be expelled from schools.
Self-loathing came off of her as she spoke. The resolve was still greater.
And all of it will be on your head, Mr. Lane. All of it.
Cold anger flooded through Cade. How could he have started to trust this woman? It didn't matter that she hated what she was doing. She was doing it. She was one of them.
Fuck you, Kataranis,
he said it coldly, distinctly, so she'd know he meant it. Sam came to her feet. Her own anger was rising.
No, fuck you, Cade.
She walked out of the room, called over her shoulder.
And get on your feet. We're leaving in 10 minutes.
27. Leave no man behind. In a cheap room off Khao San Road, a powerful black man tossed and turned in the grips of a nightmare, in the grips of a memory. They were coming for him. The Corps. His brothers. He could hear the choppers, hear the small arms fire. They'd found the place he'd been taken to, the place he'd been held, the place he'd chosen to stay. You never leave a man behind. They were coming for him, and God help anyone who stood in their way. Lunara was pulling away from him. Their minds were still linked. They'd taken the Nexus just an hour ago. He could feel her fear. He could feel her resolve.
No,
He begged her.
Don't go out there. They'll kill you.
He knew her answer before she spoke it, knew it before he felt it in her mind. She'd rather die than fall into the Kazakh army's hands. She'd rather die than endure the rapes and tortures at the hands of the dictator's secret police again. He knew. He'd felt them all, relived them in her memories, every moment of her abuse. He'd seethed with rage, seethed with helplessness. To her, it was a fact of life. To him, it was a betrayal. He hadn't fought on the side of rapists and torturers. He hadn't. But he had.
No, he begged. I'll protect you.
He knew it was a lie, knew he wouldn't be able to. He begged anyway.
Don't go. Please, don't die.
Goodbye, Watson. Remember me. Remember us all.
She clanged the reinforced steel door to the cellar closed. He felt and heard her lock it from the other side. It hadn't been locked in weeks. He fell to his knees, weeping.
No, no, no.
He could hear the gunfire outside, close, so close. He heard a scream. Had that been Tamir's voice? He rose up. He could feel her still, just outside the door.